wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Sunday morning, and it's time for Abandoned Manitoba with Gordon Goldsberg. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
Now, you had a clarification that you wanted to talk about from last week's story.
Yes, I heard from listener Emery Campbell, who wrote to me to tell me about another dimension to the story of Good Harbor. Remember the fishing station we talked about on Lake Winnipegosis. The possibility that it was not just overfishing by humans that contributed to the decline of the fishery there, but that a large number of fish-eating birds, things like pelicans and cormorants, that had eaten a disproportionate number of smaller fish that were necessary to the health of the population. So I thought, well, I don't know if that's necessarily a given. The possibility is still debated by scientists, but I thought at least that our listeners should hear about it.
I love how engaged our listeners are when it comes to Abandoned Manitoba.
Good sign. Yeah, me too.
Now, remind us of the clue from last week.
Well, I said that all too often I hear about scrapbooks, photos, documents that end up in the trash because the family doesn't want to keep them and they just don't know what else to do. So I thought, well, this week I'll talk about productive ways to deal with these precious family mementos. Often it's a matter of space. You know, you might have an elderly person who's moving into a senior's residence and they simply don't have room in their new home. And, you know, whenever possible, they should try to pass these items on to their children or to other family members who would treasure them. But there is something unusual that's happening right now. I talked recently to Dr. Shelley Sweeney. She's the head archivist at the University of Manitoba Archives. And she says that there are two generations who are simultaneously downsizing. Traditionally, there's only a single generation that passes it on to the next one. So effectively what it means is that the children of that person who is moving into the senior's home may also be downsizing, so they don't want to take all their parents' stuff. And so the result is you have quite a lot of stuff that's just finding no home. And so I get quite a few emails from people who are looking for good homes for these items. They can't keep them, but they just don't feel right in throwing them in the garbage either.
Okay, so what do you recommend they do?
Well, ideally, it would be best if they could donate them somewhere where they are available to historians and scholars into the future. And I suppose the best option would be to keep them in the community where these items pertain, you know. And so most of the larger communities in Manitoba have some sort of archive or museum where these items might be able to be donated. Now, unfortunately, the problem here is that these facilities often have limited space. You know, so they've got to be careful in what they accept. And, you know, so if an item is unique, if it's important, they'll probably accept a donation. But on the other hand, common items might well be refused. So, for example, if you have your grandmother's sewing machine and you want to donate it to a local museum, the reality is most museums have a wealth of sewing machines. It's a common item. And so unless yours is unusual in some way, or if your grandmother is especially noteworthy, they will probably turn it down. Because the fact is they don't have abundant storage space. And another problem is they may not have really ideal storage space either. You know, so what you want to do is have conditions that are appropriate for long-term preservation. You know, you need things like temperature control. You need humidity control. You need, of course, to keep the rodents out, the insects out. You need to have professional boxes and folders that are free of acids and other chemicals, you know, to preserve these things. And some of these smaller facilities just don't have good conditions for preservation. The other problem is that for long-term storage, you know, you want to make sure that this museum or this archive that you're donating your items to is going to be there in 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, 100 years. And, you know, especially some of the smaller ones where they've been established by one person in a small community on their own property. Well, unfortunately, there's no succession plan. These things can often falter when that one person goes out of the picture. You know, and there's nobody to operate them. So hopefully in those cases, those collections would be dispersed to an appropriate other place, but not always.
How can a person find these museums or archives?
A good way is to consult a professional organization to which these facilities belong, you know, such as the Association for Manitoba Archives. You know, they focus on the archives around the province, or the Association of Manitoba Museums that represents the museums. And, you know, these groups maintain lists of member facilities, and they can usually refer a person to an appropriate place somewhere that the records they have are pertinent.
What should someone do if their local museum does not accept one of their items?
Well, the first thing I would do is to check with a facility farther afield. So, for example, the largest archive in Manitoba, by far, is the provincial archive here in Winnipeg. But they are facing a severe space crunch, so they have had to become very selective at what they accept. Likewise, the University of Manitoba Archives, which is also a very large general archives, has also nearly full. So, you know, in fact, I spoke recently to a group of 9 professional archivists about challenges that they face, and all but one of them said space was one of their major concerns.
So then what should someone do?
If there's no archive or museum that will accept an item, I guess there's no recourse but to turn to the commercial sector. In other words, to sell the item. No, it turns out, you know, historical things like letters, photos, postcards, books, you know, these are all fairly highly sought after by collectors, you know, and they can command fairly high prices, you know. But I would warn people that they should be wary of a few dishonest people, you know, who will try to buy items at a very low price and then turn around and sell it at a very high price. But there are many scrupulously honest buyers as well, you know. So a better assurance of honesty can come if you choose a buyer who is a member of an organization like the Manitoba Antique Association or the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of Canada. You know, if they've got a reputation to uphold, you know, they won't try to cheat the people that they work with.
The downside, though, of selling items is that they're no longer available to historians.
Right, exactly. And that's always my primary motive, is to ensure that these important historical items are available long term. But, you know, there is an alternative. So if ultimately you have to sell the item, you could make a high-quality copy. And that'll often suffice for historical research purposes. You know, so digitization, you know, where you take some kind of scanning device and turn the paper into a digital file. You know, anybody can go these days to a local electronics store and buy a scanner and start scanning old photos and documents. I would, however, urge people to consult resources on the internet to ensure that they're following the appropriate standards. We want to make sure that the scans they make are acceptable. And it may ultimately be preferable to get the best possible results to turn to trained people who are, you know, knowledgeable in how to scan these documents. There are several, however, excellent digitization initiatives that are going on around Manitoba that I'm aware of. So, for example, at Manitou, Al Thorlefson is developing what they call the Pemba Manitou Digital Archives for documents for that area. You know, here in Winnipeg, Doug Evans is leading a group that is digitizing records related to Flin Flon, an enormous collection that they're gradually digitizing. The museum in Morris is digitizing back issues of the Morris Herald newspaper. Well, in fact, I've got a website where I'm tabulating these various digitization initiatives where people can find out where they could go potentially to find someone to help them doing digitization of some of their precious family items. It's called Manitoba 2020 Hindsight. www.manitoba2020hindsight.ca.
Such a great idea, Gordon. Good for you. But if after all this, no one wants to buy the item, is that when the garbage can comes in?
Yeah, well, if all else fails, I would say listeners should contact me. You know, I really feel terrible if I hear about an important collection that might end up in the scrap heap simply because nobody wants to take it. So, for example, my good friend, Ed Arndt, who lives at Verdun, has spent years tabulating wonderful scrapbooks that document many of the facets of his life, many of the communities in which he has lived. They're wonderful. They're huge. They're detailed. And so far, Ed hasn't found a single place that wants to accept them. So I said to Ed, in the worst case scenario, I will take them. I will protect them. I will try to find a good home for them. But ultimately, if I don't, then I will hang on to them because I just think they're too important to end up in a landfill.
Gordon Goldsborough, the defender of archives. I like it. That was lovely and super practical as well for many people who I think are dealing with this issue. So thank you.
You're welcome.
What's the clue for next week?
Well, this series is about historic sites in Manitoba, but next week, listeners might be tempted to think we're talking about abandoned Alberta. But I promise we will be right here at home.
Gordon, thank you so much.
See you next week.
No. Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.